Hey, everybody. Wake up live from the Rocky Mountains. This is Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris. It's Powder Blue Day, apparently. We did not plan this.
We didn't coordinate, yeah.
At all.
We got a lot of news to get to on your Tuesday. We're going to deep dive what is going on with this ceasefire. President Trump slamming Israel, basically slamming Iran, but really being pissed off about Israel and where things stand. Basically told them to turn around, stop firing these rockets at the last second. Apparently there was a consternation on the Israeli side about this. President Trump landing at the NATO summit and basically telling both sides to knock it off right now. We want a ceasefire.
All right. Also, Trump is joining the deadbeats of NATO this week at their NATO summit in order to tell them, you better start paying up. We're tired of being your sugar daddy and stop scaring the world about Russia. Knock this off right now. And in fact, he showed up. We're going to show you the video. Put on a USA hat and is not even going to summit meetings. He's going to make them come to him at the dinner. We'll have some talks, but I'm not very happy with you a-holes. We're not either.
Yeah.
So we're feeling that.
We're also going to talk about the Christians being attacked and hunted down in Syria. Plus, Congressman Thomas Massey is going to be joining us here in a little bit. All of that and more. So let us know where you're joining us from around the world today. Good to see all of you on Rumble, on YouTube, on Twitch, on X. And we've got massive thunderstorms outside. So, you know, bear with us here. If suddenly you hear the crackle of thunder and the power goes out.
Hopefully not. If you joined us on the emergency broadcast when Israel started to bomb Iran, we were going hot and heavy, and then our power was cut. We walked outside, and a contractor was holding the cord. So we don't think it was the deep state. Most likely it wasn't. But you never know, given that we're literally a mom-and-pop operation here.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to talk about the latest with Israel and Iran and President Trump, and what does Israel do next? Well, what about regime change? We're going to talk about that. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends at American Financing, because we're all feeling it. Costs are still rising. Inflation is slowing, but still a thing. Prices are still going up. So you think, well, should I call American Financing to refinance and pay off this credit card debt that I'm living off of? But then you second guess yourself because the low mortgage rate that you have. But obviously, when you evaluate your debt, if you're paying super high interest in one place and low interest in another, you're never going to build yourself out of debt and into financial freedom. The math doesn't work out. Let American Financing show you that with their tools that will teach you this product that wealthy people do all the time, which is leverage assets and build instead of continuing to dig into the red. Because again, if you're only making minimum payments on that bad debt, you're not going anywhere. You're basically treading water. So you owe it to your family to learn this trick and see what's possible. There's no upfront fees, no pressure. They're just going to teach you this. Call them at 866-890-8434. Again, that's 866-890-8434. Or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. Commit to spending the time to studying this. See if it works for your family, and then you can build wealth. Again, 866-890-8434. Or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
Well, President Trump got pissed. On Monday, he victory lapped a ceasefire agreement between Israel and Iran. Here was his Truth Social. We have completed our very successful attack on three nuclear sites in Iran, including Fordo, Natanz, Isfahan, all planes now outside of Iran airspace. A full payload of bombs was dropped, and you know the rest. And then on Tuesday, Israel defied him and continued to fire against Iran anyway. And then Trump posted this: Israel, do not drop those bombs. If you do, it is a major violation. Bring your pilots home now. Donald Trump, President of the United States.
They got no shalom. Remember when he was warning Hamas with the shalom? They did not even get those niceties this time. It was, we're talking to you. Now, the president spoke on his way to the NATO summit, reflecting what a lot of us have felt, and even dropping this F-bomb. We've warned you about it. The president is clearly pissed. Watch.
Israel says that Iran violated the peace agreement and the ceasefire agreement. Do you believe that Iran is still committed to the peace?
Yeah, I do. They violated it, but Israel violated it, too.
Are you questioning if Israel is committed?
Israel, as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I've never seen before. The biggest load that we've seen. I'm not happy with Israel. You know, when I say, okay, now you have 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. But I'm really unhappy if Israel's going out this morning because of one rocket that didn't land, that was shot, perhaps by mistake, that didn't land. I'm not happy about that. You know what? We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Do you understand that?
That's pretty clear terms.
I understand, sir.
It's a very clear message. And then later on the airplane, he was asked if he wants regime change in Iran, and he returned to the diplomacy that we'd be, and does he want regime change after all? Listen.
Do you want to see regime change in Iran?
No. If there was, there was. But no, I don't want it. I'd like to see everything calm down as quickly as possible. Regime change takes chaos. And ideally, we don't want to see so much chaos, so we'll see how it does. You know, the Iranians are very good traders, very good business people, and they got a lot of oil. They should be fine. They should be able to rebuild and do a good job. They're never going to have nuclear, but other than that, they should do a great job.
So
all right, we want to bring...
He's returning to diplomacy that we saw when the peace talks began. So we're going to bring in journalist Max Blumenthal now from the Gray Zone. We want to ask him his thoughts on this. But first of all, Max, given Israel's history with violating ceasefires, why is this a surprise? Were we fools to trust that this would hold in the first place?
Well, Trump is using invective and threats without any concrete material backing to try to make this ceasefire hold because of that history. And Israel's military chief of staff, Eyal Zamir, said this war will not end. This was just a phase. So Israel's openly saying that it will violate this ceasefire that Trump claims will last forever. Trump really saw his diplomacy, to the extent that it was diplomatic at all, as a masterstroke that was going to lead to him being granted the Nobel Prize for which he was nominated by Pakistan just about 24 hours before he initiated the porn-themed Operation Midnight Hammer with like 27 planes and, expending 60% of the U.S. stock of MOPs, 30,000-pound bombs, to supposedly eliminate the Fordo facility. And this was all choreographed through Qatar with a plan or expectation that Iran would stage some symbolic strikes on the Al Udeid Air Base and a few other U.S. bases that had already been evacuated. And then everybody would get to claim a win at the precise time that Trump wanted it. And then it turned out that Israel just arranged for a gigantic munitions dump over Tehran after Trump's ceasefire had expired, which created provoked four waves of Iranian ballistic missiles, including one that had struck a severe blow in the city of Beersheba. And now the stage is set for another phase. So Trump, for the first time, I think we saw a U.S. president in Trump really let out his fury and anger against Israel. I mean, every prime minister, president who's dealt with Prime Minister Netanyahu has hated him. Bill Clinton famously in 1996 stormed out of a meeting with Netanyahu and said, "Who's the fucking superpower here?" But that was private. This is public. And what Trump has done is he has revealed how much daylight exists between Tel Aviv and Washington. And one more thing he's done is he's trying to restore the dignity that he lost in front of his base and in front of the intellectual architects of America First, like Steve Bannon and Tucker Carlson, who had accused him of betrayal for giving Netanyahu what he wanted in waging this strike.
You know, and then we have a historical record of Israel violating these ceasefire agreements since October 7th.
Even before that,
I mean, over 3,000 ceasefire terms since October 7th across Gaza and Lebanon. So yeah. What makes us think, you know, are they delusional to think that this is going to hold, that this ceasefire will will be stamped in stone and we're going to have a prosperous Middle East?
Specifically, can we also ask this question? How will President Trump stand in contrast to Biden? Because Biden said, do not go into Lebanon. And they were like, that's nice, and did it anyway. Here's a ceasefire with Lebanon. That's nice. 2,700 violations. President Biden did nothing. So now at least we have Trump showing frustration, but will there be more than that because Biden did nothing?
Well, to try to answer both questions, Trump has more power than Biden does to take concrete action against Israel, to enforce a ceasefire by suspending weapons shipments, for example, something neither of them have done. Because Donald Trump has a cult following. He's sort of a cult leader, and his base will mostly go wherever he wants, although we've seen some defections from top Trump influencers and Republicans under 45. Only 20% of Republicans under 45 supported Trump's strike on Iran enthusiastically, according to a new CNN poll. So Trump has the credibility among his base to go the other way and to really seriously pressure Israel. I don't know if he will. I don't think he will. But he has it. Israel suffered a serious political and psychological blow from this war, yet Israel maintained the military upper hand, and neither side, Iran or Israel, established military deterrence. And so what we're going to see in the weeks and months ahead is more Israeli assassination attempts, more sabotage attacks like the kind we saw in April on the Bandar Abbas port in southern Iran, and more continuous warfare in the gray zone, which may provoke another phase of all-out war. This is not a ceasefire, it is an interregnum, and Iran has to restore and improve its air defenses, which proved to be its biggest weakness, and we don't know what happened with the 60% enriched uranium stockpile that was supposedly spirited out of the Fordo facility in the days before the U.S. strike. But if Iran manages to take that to a safe place and begin enrichment again, then Israel has seriously failed in one of its top two objectives. The other major objective here, the major Israeli objective, is regime change. And Israel completely failed there. Iran demonstrated the resiliency of its system. And what Israel's attacks targeting civilians did was produce a rally around the flag effect in Iran, which we will see intensify in the coming days as the holiday of Muharram, or the observance of Muharram, begins.
So, Max, let me ask you this. I mean, you saw Zionists over the past 24 hours furious, really furious, that Trump, I think Mark Levin said that he was furious. He hated the word ceasefire, that you would never have a ceasefire with Hitler. That's what he said.
Yeah.
So it's always been about regime change. And so they're never going to be happy unless the regime is ousted. So this ceasefire, I don't see how the ceasefire holds. I don't see how they just go back to their corners and call it a night.
I think there are two camps in the Israeli establishment. One is sort of the Likudnik fanatical messianist camp that Mark Levin, the kind of astroturfed AM radio carnival barker who is a never Trumper, is giving voice to. And there's another that sees what Trump did as shortening the war to Israel's benefit and to Israel's relief. The fanatical camp has a sense of inviability because of the wars of extermination it carried out in Gaza and the blows it struck against Hezbollah. And they think that Israel's sort of this invincible lion. They're delusional because Iran managed to seriously puncture the colonial psyche of Israel by physically penetrating Israel's Iron Dome, its multi-billion-dollar, multi-layered air defenses. And this did serious psychological damage to Israel, did economic damage. I mean, they struck like a major tech park in Beersheba and hit the Microsoft offices. This is going to cost Israel a lot in foreign direct investment. Israel's credit rating is going to be downgraded again, but more importantly, it has harmed the Israeli psyche. Israelis are different from others in the region who are accustomed to the continuous warfare of Israel. They can receive more punishment and demonstrate steadfastness, where Israelis are accustomed to this kind of colonial existence and waging one-way wars of extermination. And now Iran has shown that their air defenses can be penetrated and there's nothing beyond it. And Iran can potentially improve on that. So I think Israel also wanted this ceasefire. Israel was suffering, and all parties involved, the U.S., Israel, and Iran, wanted this for their own reasons and are going to each claim victory for their own reasons. But Israel is the one that will have to, in order for its survival, initiate a new war.
Now, do you think that President Trump may have given the United States an excuse, since we're using the F word here, to F off? Can we just F off there and let them handle it on their own? I mean, I know that's a bit of a pipe dream, but you said that that Trump has the ability to withdraw weapons and support in a way that Biden never would. We know that because Matthew Miller, the State Department, said we were going to do whatever Netanyahu told us to do, full stop. So is this too much of a dream that we just F off?
Well, you know, I was in Iran just in May, and I got to tour the aerospace park where Iran's IRGC puts on display their ballistic missiles, their drone program, which was mostly reverse engineered from captured U.S. and Israeli drones, their space program. They have a nascent space program, and their air defense program. And what astounded me was this is a country that has been under harsh sanctions since 1979. Its economy is completely cut off from the outside world, and even its regional neighbors refuse to provide it with military assistance. Everything there was produced domestically using domestic know-how, native know-how, whereas Israel's weapon systems, including its vaunted Iron Dome system, its Arrow system, relied on the U.S. taxpayer to fund them. And then throughout this war, Israel took for granted that the U.S. would send destroyers to the Red Sea and the Mediterranean to knock down Iranian ballistic missiles, that the U.S. and their Jordanian vassals would be taking down Iranian ballistic missiles. And so the U.S. was involved from the beginning directly in this war, just in a quote-unquote defensive capacity, and only got involved offensively after Trump violated the will of the American public and his base in order to strike Iran on behalf of Israel. So it's obvious that Israel, the so-called Jewish state, cannot survive a second without the protection and funding of whatever Gentile authority is in Washington. As soon as, actually, Israel's Foreign Minister Gideon Saar said this about a month ago, if U.S. weapons shipments are suspended, Israel will collapse and cease to survive. So that's how tenuous Israel's colonial existences, whereas Iran has demonstrated it can survive virtually alone and still maintain status as a kind of regional power. So Israel's in a race against time right now, and that's why I think they're going to seek to reinitiate another conflict with Iran.
Max Blumenthal, head of the Gray Zone. Always great to see you, Max. Thank you so much, as always.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks for your work.
Thanks, Max. Appreciate it.
All right. If we could just put up this screen, this Times of Israel. This is how this is being reported in the Israeli press about President Trump's tirade. It's very much, mommy, he yelled at me. Not, yes, we violated the ceasefire. We should not have done that. It's, we're going to tell the world we got scolded.
Yeah.
But no self-reflection there. Like, maybe we should stop it. Maybe there was a ceasefire in place. Maybe we should not do that. Right. So again, if past is prologue, the ceasefire will not hold, no matter how much we want it to.
A lot of people in the chat saying, yeah, Max is, yeah, very, very smart. Very, very smart. Say one of the best intellects on this. And people are wondering, they're like, why is he anti-Semitic? Max is Jewish, by the way.
Yes.
A lot of American Jews don't like being thrown into like this Israel bag, like, oh, you have to somehow support Israel. Like they can't stand that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about Trump's appearance at NATO this week and how he's telling Europe, we are tired of supporting your lifestyle. You have to pay up. Now, European leaders think that they can do these sort of bookkeeping type fake outs of Trump with their budget. Is he going to respond to this? Is he going to see right through it? We're going to talk about that in a second. But first, Clayton brought a show and tell.
I bought a little show. Yeah, a little show and tell if I can here. It's blocking my microphone here. Summer's here. You want to set some goals for, you know, being out outside, not feeling like a fat ass. You want to lose some weight. You want to exercise more, eat better. It's hard to achieve that without a plan. And you guys know the benefits of fasting. And you also know how difficult it can be. Like, have you ever done like a 3-day fast, a 4-day fast? You know, it's like, oh my gosh, you're like, on the third day, it's really, really hard. That's where Prolon comes in. They have a 5-day fasting program mimicking diet, okay? And it actually ship it right to your door. This is heavy. Everything you need is in here. You scan the QR code. Everything is inside this box from Prolon. Day 1, day 2, day 3, all the way up to day 5. Man, it's really bright in here. Can't even see those numbers. We're working on our lighting. Sorry about that. Anyway, Prolon mimics your diet, summer ready, secret weapon. Prolon gives you a science-backed, structured approach to target fat loss, support lean muscle, and reset your metabolism so you can look your best and feel confident all season long. It's a plant-based nutrition program. They have soups, snacks, beverages designed to nourish the body while keeping you in a fasting state, triggering cellular rejuvenation and renewal. It's, you know, again, no matter the season, when I'm craving a real reset, Prolon is the only nutrition program that works. I'm telling you, it's convenient, backed by Nobel-winning science, and it absolutely works. So give it a try today. Right now, they're giving everyone 15% off site-wide plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe to their 5-day nutrition program. Give it a shot and kickstart everything. Just visit prolonlife.com/redact. That's right there on your screen. prolonlife.com/redacted to claim your 15% discount and your bonus gift today. For a limited time, you can be the first in line to experience the new gen at special savings. Prolon is offering Redacted listeners 15% off to give it a shot. So if you've been like, oh, I could never do a fast, well, now you can. So give it a shot.
All right, well, this is how President Trump showed up at the NATO summit today, letting everyone know what his priorities are. Here he steps off the plane in Europe, and he puts on his USA hat. This is how he's going to meet with NATO leaders to tell them, we are not paying for your security anymore. We want you to pay up or else. I'm not quite sure what that or else means. I hope it's big.
I hope it closes down NATO altogether.
I really do want that, but I've been wanting that for a long time. And as a parent, I don't like empty threats. If you say you're going to take away the screen time, you got to. Am I right? Well, in fact, the president is reportedly not even going to go to the NATO meetings, but just show up at the dinners and then let the rest of them kind of come to him. Now, the president and the vice president have been telling NATO members that they need to commit to spending 5% of their country's GDP to NATO. And we want to see you put your money where your mouth is. But NATO leaders are trying to be super shady about this. And I hope that the president can see right through this. Now, the president posted this on Truth Social today after Spain said that they would only pay 2.5% into NATO. This chart shows how little everyone else spends compared to the U.S. Very few of them even hit 2%. How did Poland get so screwed to be spending so much all along when the rest of them are just kind of flying under the radar, not paying their fair share? Why don't they get the youngest child deal, I wonder? The UK says that they will increase their NATO spending, but they're doing it just with tricky bookkeeping. They're not actually going to commit more defense. What they're doing is called smoke and mirrors, according to the Telegraph. They're not actually going to put any new money in. What Keir Starmer is doing is counting old infrastructure projects and calling them new defense spending, which is a ruse. So if you are buying this BS line that the UK needs more defense and will spend more, you're going to get nothing for that except for old projects. It's a journal entry. They're not actually going to spend more money. Opponents of this say you can't stop missiles with spreadsheets. You're not actually doing anything new. Do you think President Trump will not see right through this? Like, oh yeah, we're gonna basically someone says, well, how much are you spending on your kids' tuition? And you're like, well, I bought them school clothes last year. So does that count? That counts into what I'm committing? Absolutely not. Spain says they're not going to come up to this 5%, full stop. They say that NATO's pledge allows each country level flexibility. So they say our level is 2.1%. That's what we want to pay, and that's what we're sticking with. Now, what they say is that they can't afford more defense because it would cause them to cut social programs, which should piss you as an American right off, because what they get in Spain, they're saying, we want to keep giving our people free healthcare, early retirement, 35-hour work week. Americans don't get that. We want to keep doing that, which means we can't pay into our defense. So we as Americans will keep paying for their military and they will keep having a cushy life. Now, I feel this acutely, having lived for 5 years on the Iberian Peninsula, treating like this gauche American. We get disrespected, but our tax dollars subsidize their good lifestyle. Like, we as Americans don't know the good life. Well, no, because we work harder to support your good life. Michael Schellenberger put it this way recently, and I feel this in my bones. Watch.
We go to Europe. You have universal health care. You work 35 hours a week. You retire at a young age. You don't work nearly as hard as we do in the United States. You have many more benefits, in large part because we pay for all of your security, or a large part of it. And in return, we just get disrespect, entitlement, like we're like your children, and this is a dysfunctional relationship. It needs to end. It needs to change.
Okay, so is this summit where President Trump makes this change and says to Europeans, you don't get this cush life because we pay your military anymore? Or will he be hoodwinked by these journal entry type things? Now, here's how these spoiled brats are going to try to convince the president that our support is absolutely necessary. It's war emergency. NATO leader Mark Rutte keeps screaming that the Russians are coming, but he can't exactly say why or when. Here is today EU Commissioner Ursula von der Leyen saying that they are already at war with Russia. So that's why it's absolutely necessary to beef up all of their military spending on our dollar. Here is her absolute lying, ugly face. Watch.
You're adapting to the new reality of a full-scale war right here on European soil. And just like your industry, all of Europe is facing a changing international landscape. But in recent months, Europe has taken action. Action that seemed unthinkable just a year ago. We set up the Rearm Europe plan to mobilize indeed 650 billion euros in defense investment over the next 4 years. We must build more bridges between civilian and military. We know that Russia will be capable of testing our mutual defense commitments within the next 5 years. I thank you for this opportunity to engage with you. Long live Europe, and thank you very much.
I mean, I'm just telling you, Russia's coming for you in the next 5 years. Thanks, everybody. This has been great.
And I'm so glad to see all my European allies here who are getting ready for Putin's invasion of Europe. So as one douchebag in the chat just said, he's like, redacted is paid propaganda by Putin, Russian propagandists. Yeah. Okay. That might have worked like 3 years ago.
So stupid. I'm not even going to be bothered with that dumb shit.
You have to be retarded.
Yeah. She's obviously lying. Russian state media has put a limit on where this war ends. We've gone over this and over it and over again. You can refuse to see it if you want. But RIA's state media defines the war on that map right there. The dark gray is where this ends. They'd never said they wanted the rest of Ukraine. They never said they wanted Europe. Why the heck would Russia want these countries full of spoiled brats? I'm not saying you, Europeans. You have no power. Europeans themselves, lovely people, they have no power. Their government has a government that makes decisions to basically make their lives miserable. You know it and I know it. No European thinks the EU makes their lives better. I don't know anyone who would. Okay, and then speaking of spoiled brats, again, not Europeans, European leaders. Zelensky is not going to be in the NATO summit meetings, but he does get to go to the dinner and pose for photo ops. What he's saying here basically is a lot of crap. NATO's still behind him. We're still going to sanction Russia, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he's not even really in the room where it happened. He's just literally like waiting in the hallway for his photo op, says some strong things about Russia, and then he's out. And on the plane to this NATO summit, President Trump was asked if he's still trying to broker a deal between Russia and Ukraine. He said, absolutely, yes. I would like Putin to come to the negotiation table. He says, you know, Putin called to see if I'd like help with Iran. And I was like, no, I got it. Don't need your help there, but I need you to, you know, get a deal done with Ukraine. So Zelensky, who? So again, we're going to see a lot more posturing and dumb stuff out of this NATO summit. We hope, though, that President Trump shows up with that boss energy and tells them, you need to pay up or we're out. Otherwise, you deal with this Russia stuff yourself. Also, Russia's not coming. Work yourself into a tizzy. All you want, we're out. That's what I would like to see if the president is watching.
Alberta Prepper in our chat room says, Canadians have wanted out of NATO and NORAD, but every time we voted to have a government take us out, nope, not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Clown show. Okay. Well, we've got more news to get to here on your, what is today? Tuesday.
Today's Tuesday.
It's been a whirlwind this week, as you can imagine. We are going to talk about what is happening next for the Big Beautiful Bill. And Congressman Thomas Massey is going to be joining us because he's been in a bit of a dust up, maybe putting it lightly, with President Trump over his unwillingness to budge on making our country further in debt. But is this whole Big Beautiful Bill going to be scuttled anyway? We'll talk about that with Congressman Massey in just a moment. But first, we want to tell you about what's going on right now with gold, what's not being said loud enough, because war can wipe out your financial future as well. Right now, the U.S. is on a dangerous path. Record spending, endless global conflict, Ukraine, Russia, Israel, Iran, all of it fueled by borrowing from a government printing press that's running on fumes right now. Congressman Massey knows it well. He wears a freaking debt badge that's like an electronic debt badge on his shirt, showing just how deeply we are in debt. The $36 trillion that the U.S. dollar that we are now in debt. But that's even not even the full story. War is brutally expensive. Makes them a lot of money, the military-industrial complex. So here's what you need to be watching right now. The U.S. debt, it's accelerating out of control. The dollar losing value. The BRICS nations, you saw President Putin last week talking about all of the transactions that have been carried out among the BRICS nations now, totaling over $1 trillion. Like, BRICS is on the rise. The reverse of the U.S. dollar is happening. But gold and silver, they are rising for a reason. Congressman Ron Paul likes to say on our show, you know, the value of purchasing and making sure you have gold. You can never go wrong with having gold. You can never go wrong with having silver. Goldman Sachs is already predicting gold could hit $4,500 an ounce by 2026. Why? Because smart money is moving right now. Central banks, billionaires, institutional investors, all investing. And so it's your turn right now to act on this. Give our friends at Lear Capital a phone call. Here's their 800 number on your screen. They can help you invest in gold by going to call them 1-800-613-3557. We started investing in gold and silver years ago. Natalie and I did. It's been one of the smartest moves and secure moves that we've ever made for our family. Even our kids have holdings. This isn't a trend, it's a shift right now, and you can actually do it as well. So give them a call, just talk on the phone with them. They're an American company. They'll have a conversation with you, no pressure. 1-800-613-3557, and see if it's right for you and your family. You know, do you want to invest in the stock market? You want to put your family's future there? Do you want to invest in US dollars, put your family's future there? Or do you want to invest in something tangible like gold, silver, and even real estate? You can do that if you have a self-directed IRA, and they can actually walk you through and help you with that. Just go to LearRedacted.com or call their 800 number, 1-800-613-3557. Again, 1-800-613-3557. That is the place to go. All right. Are we all good?
Yeah.
Okay,
we're doing
good.
All right.
We're good. All right. So back in 2022, President Donald Trump at the time issued an endorsement of Congressman Thomas Massey. Here it was. Congressman Thomas Massie is a conservative warrior for Kentucky's 4th Congressional District, an MIT graduate and a first-rate defender of the Constitution. Thomas fights hard to protect your liberties, especially the First and Second Amendments, which are under siege by the radical left. Strong on the border and our military and veterans, Thomas Massie has my complete and total endorsement. Well, then this weekend, this happened. President Donald Trump posting this.
Spanking. You've probably seen it.
This is like a book that he wrote here. Holy smokes. I'll just read the first few sentences. Congressman Thomas Massie of Kentucky is not MAGA, even though he likes to say he is. Actually, MAGA doesn't want him, doesn't know him, and doesn't respect him. He's a negative force who almost always votes no, no matter how good something may be. Congressman Thomas Massie voted today to join Redacted. See, he votes yes sometimes on things that he cares about. And he joins us now. Congressman, good to see you.
Oh, it's good to see you, Clayton. Listen, I retweeted Trump's diatribe there, and I said, you know, the president has declared so much war on me today that I think he needs an act of Congress for this.
Right. The Babylon Bee take on it was that Trump declared that you are close to having a nuclear weapon. I know you're a homesteader. How did you enrich all that uranium while you're tending to your fruit trees?
Yeah.
You know, if I had uranium on my farm, I would probably figure out a way to enrich it and have some kind of fusion reactor, not fission reactor, and we would be making free energy. But as it were, I have to have solar panels and heat with wood.
I was sitting there with Tucker Carlson the other day, and when this attack kind of happened, and I became enraged about it. This idea that you're un-American, you're unpatriotic, that you're not MAGA, you're not Make America Great Again. I couldn't wrap my head around it, given the fact that he's endorsed you calling exactly that. So, I mean, I know we're joking about it, but at the heart of it, is it true? You're un-American, you're unpatriotic?
No, I think I'm the first America First congressman there is, the original one. Look, I'm against the next war already. I don't want a war in Eastern Europe. I don't want a war in the Middle East. And that's part of what we all signed up for when we voted for Trump. I endorsed President Trump before the election, even after campaigning for Ron DeSantis, because I didn't want another war. And I thought President Trump wouldn't get us into another war. It's hard to say what will happen here in the Middle East. You know, the three bombing sites to end Iran's nuclear aspirations might be the 2025 version of 2 weeks to slow the spread. You know, we were gonna have 14 weeks to slow the spread. We had a 12-day war. Those are eerily the same number of days. I hope it's true this time that it ends after 12 days. But when it comes to MAGA, I think at its base, it's putting America first. Let's take care of our own infrastructure, our veterans. Let's protect our own borders. Let's do the things that we need to create jobs and a prosperous economy here at home before we go looking overseas for dragons to slay. And so I think it may be the president who's strayed from that message and not me in this instance. Also, he's a little bit upset, I think, about my no vote on the big, beautiful bill. But again, that's where I promised that I wouldn't increase our debt, that we would find responsible ways to fund the government. You know, I've joked that I'm going to reprogram my debt ticker here that I wear all the time to be the number of milliseconds since the president has tweeted about me. And after I made that joke, it wasn't 12 hours later, he tweeted about me again. And, you know, I think the reason he's concerned about me is twofold. Number one, I am speaking the truth. I am telling you what's in the big, beautiful bill that other people won't tell you. I am telling you what this engagement in Iran could lead to. But number two, I'm the horse that's not in the barn. I'm not controlled. I'm not controlled by the Republican Party. I'm not controlled by any president. I never have been. I work for 750,000 people in Northern Kentucky. And I think I'm the horse that's getting flogged so that all the other horses will stay in the barn. And when I walked on the floor of the House today to vote, everybody was like looking at me, surprised that I still had some hide on my back after the flogging. And I'm like, no, right. Guys, hop on in. The water's fine.
So will this big, beautiful bill pass? Do you think it's going to pass in any kind of its current state at all? And do you think maybe your message has resonated with the Senate?
Well, you know, there are a lot of senators who are upset with the changes. The bill has gotten watered down. If you're conservative, it didn't get better. It got worse in the Senate in some regards. It got better in one regard. I think they've reduced the bailout for those sanctuary cities in blue states called the SALT deduction, which would allow you to write off state and local taxes if you live in a high tax state or locality. That got better, but we're learning that everything else is getting worse. There's a provision that was in this bill that I fought hard for called the RAINS Act, and that started in our Judiciary Committee here in the House in the Regulatory Reform Subcommittee, which I used to chair. We got the RAINS Act passed. We had a hearing on it. But the RAINS Act would say that if you have a regulation that is going to affect the economy by more than several tens of millions of dollars, then it has to come back to Congress for a vote. You can't do that by executive order or by administrative fiat. Well, we got a version of that in the House version of a big, beautiful bill, but it turns out the Senate has stripped that out. So that's a bad thing. There may be other good things that are getting stripped out in the Senate. We'll see. I have said all along, Clayton, that if the bill gets better in the Senate, I'll consider voting for it, but I'm worried that it's not getting better. And ultimately, it's about the impact on our debt and our deficit. They say this thing balances. It's further from balancing now after it goes through the Senate. And the only reason they can make it balance is they spend all the money in the first 5 years and promise to cut the spending 5 years from now when most of these people won't be here any longer.
Now, I want to talk about this faction inside of party politics, because studies show that the right has a wide diversity of thought, or has in the last 5 years, whereas the left often moves in ideological lockstep. But now we're seeing these purity tests on the right, which is real MAGA versus fake MAGA, the White House posting trust President Trump, people who questioned, rightly so, the bombing raid in Iran were called panikins. Has the right forgotten that it's supposed to be the party of independent thinking, that that's what they prided themselves on during the pandemic? What's happening there is this tribalist test. How do you see this? Why is this playing out right now?
Look, I think you've put your finger on it. This is exactly the issue. Are we a party of a personality, or are we a party of ideas? And I'm worried that it's a party of personality. The purity test now isn't, are you for the same ideas that our party is for, or the same ideas that you campaigned on? The purity test now is, will you rubber stamp whatever President Trump wants? Now, 85 or 90% of the time, I'm in agreement with President Trump because he's upholding the principles of the Republican Party and those things that he campaigned on. But when he gets us involved in another war in the Middle East, or when he increases the deficit, I'm sorry, that's not the program that I signed up for. So you can be mad at me, but I think we need more voices in Congress. And frankly, a lot of these issues are not even issues the president cares about. He didn't necessarily campaign on reducing the debt or the deficit. He just wants to get a deal done. And right now within the Senate and the House, it's the big spenders who are ascendant. They are the ones who get to write the bill. And then the president is saying, all right, well, let's go with that because that's what they came up with. It's not the end of the world if this bill fails. If this bill fails, we go back to the drawing board and we write a better version of it. I think a more conservative version, a skinnier version of it, not a big giant bill that combines everything together. But yeah, let's take care of the border. Let's extend those tax cuts that I voted for in 2017. And let's put the work requirements in Medicaid. We can balance this budget and repeal the Green New Deal. And we can balance this budget and do some good things. We don't have to put all this other stuff in it.
Congressman, we'll get you out of here on this. We know you got to run, but President Trump at the NATO summit, getting off the airplane, putting on a USA hat. And we just did a whole segment that Natalie just did a moment ago about, you know, Europe seems to be girding themselves for war. And Ursula von der Leyen is extremely excited that her European allies are getting ready for Putin to invade the rest of Europe. They're on a war footing. What do you hope that President Trump's message will be at NATO, other than what my dream would be? It's like, hey, I'm closing it down. We're done with NATO. But what do you hope he'll say?
Well, you know, NATO can keep going. We just don't need to be in it. I would hope he would say, you all are big boys now. You can defend yourselves. We don't need to be involved in your wars. We don't need to be underwriting your socialism by defending your borders. And if you're going to get rid of all your coal-powered plants and buy natural gas and oil from Putin, then that's on you, not us. That's what he should be saying to those folks in NATO. But, you know, NATO is a Cold War relic. It doesn't need to exist anymore in the sense that it exists now. You've got the European Union. Those folks can stick up for themselves. And Putin, I've got no affinity for Putin. He's a Cold War relic, too. But he's popular in his own country because we keep pushing this other Cold War relic up against their borders, and that's called NATO. Trump should tell them the United States is not going to be in favor of expanding NATO. That's one of the things that triggered this war in Ukraine. So don't ask us to vote for any more expansion. We don't even need, even if you agree with the concept of NATO, and even if you did want to expand it, we don't need any more freeloaders in NATO.
Right.
Exactly
right. Speaking of freeloaders, you and I both know that we are able to fund NATO, the wars abroad, all kinds of nonsense because of the Federal Reserve. This is something that Americans just don't acutely pay attention to. So you and I and Clayton and the Pauls, we scream from the rooftops and the Fed. You actually did something about it. You introduced the Federal Reserve Abolition Act. So let's scream ourselves hoarse and ask other Americans to take note. Shall we do that? Why don't you don't have to scream, but tell us about it so that we all get fired up.
Well, listen, for several years, I introduced the Federal Reserve Audit Act just to audit them. That's all I was asking for. But it became so ridiculous that I had to reintroduce the Abolition Act. There's no reason for it to exist. But here's the good news. They're becoming irrelevant. You know, the president is mad at the Fed chairman for not lowering interest rates. Guess what? He's not even in control anymore. Congress is spending so much, and the implication of this big, beautiful bill is that Moody's downgraded our credit rating, and the people who buy our debt are saying, you know what? We don't want to buy your debt at 4.5%. We're going to have 5%. You're not as good of an investment as you used to be because you've shown us you have no intention of ever being fiscally responsible. And oh, by the way, we're buying your debt in U.S. dollars, and you are causing inflation and devaluing U.S. dollars. So we're really not getting any kind of return. So even if the Fed wanted to make interest rates 2% or 3% or 0% again, they can't even do it. The free market, and when I say free market, I'm just saying the global market, the people who typically buy our debt, the multinational banks and the sovereign wealth funds are saying, nope, we're not giving you the free ride you were getting before. We need higher interest rates. The Fed may end itself.
Wow. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah.
Wow. Just like Jeffrey Epstein. Congressman Massey, great to see you as always. The thickest hide in Congress, by the way. Thank you as always. And I asked our chat room earlier, I said, hey, you know, is Thomas Massey MAGA? Overwhelmingly, they're like, Massey is MAGA. Massey is MAGA. So
when I heard there was a ceasefire, I was hoping it was between me and Trump. You know, I've taken three bunker busters and I'm still here. I'm ready to call it even.
Do you want me to mediate? I'm offering to do that. We can get in a room. We can go to Turkey.
Yeah, Putin has offered to mediate.
Yeah, right. I'll take up any offers of mediation, but probably not.
Okay.
Putin.
All right.
Thank you, Congressman. As always, good luck to you. Thank you for always standing tall in the face of all this criticism. You know, Redacted has your back as usual. Thanks, Congressman. Great to see you.
Thank you very much, both of you.
All right. Thanks, All right. Congressman.
Coming
All right.
Up,
coming
we're
up.
Going to talk about assassinations on Christians in Syria because the interim leader there, the former ISIS leader that is now the president of Syria.
He's totally reformed.
Yeah. He said he was going to look into it. He promised us this. Remember, you may recall, we asked journalist Kavour Galmasian about it, and his reaction to this, I'm going to look into Christians getting killed, was a guttural laugh. So we're going to see how he feels about it now because...
It's gotten worse.
Yes,
Much
because
worse.
It's gotten worse. Okay, but first we want to tell you about our friends over at Chapter because a friend of ours just saved over tens of thousands of dollars on Medicare. And I want to tell you how, because if you've looked into Medicare, you realize it is a mess. And that is on purpose because there are so many predative companies out there that will... sort of make money on the plan that you choose. That's why we trust Chapter. They are an advocate for you, not the insurance company. So they don't push you into high commission plans that they can make money on. Instead, they search every Medicare option to find what actually works for you. All it takes is a 30-minute call, no stress, no sales pitch, and you walk away saving thousands with full coverage and the best plan that fits your needs. And it's lots of people who have been doing this. Thousands of people in this audience have saved working with Chapter.
Yeah, in fact, one of our viewers even wrote me the other day. It says, Clayton, I just want to tell you, we tried Chapter. They're an amazing company. So thank you to the viewer that reached out to us about that.
Absolutely. So. And again, it's a free call. The average person who works with Chapter saves over $1,100. So again, if you're turning 65 or even if you're already on Medicare and you're not sure if the plan you've got is the best one, well, then call. Costs nothing to call, just a few minutes. Call the number on your screen and talk to Chapter today, or go to askchapter.org/redacted. That's askchapter.org/redacted, or you can call them. The number there is 202-655-5811, and we thank them so much for their support of our show.
Randy Leahy in our chat says, hey, does Redacted have a Russian-funded bunker like Tim Pool? I don't know. Is that true? No, we don't. We absolutely don't. But that's fascinating.
Mm-mm.
No. We don't take money from foreign governments. So thank you for that question. All right, let's talk about this. Christians are being hunted down and massacred across Syria. Did you know that? Are you aware of this story? Probably not, because the mainstream media won't cover this story for some reason. I don't know why. This is happening around the world, but right now in Syria, it is most acute. Over the weekend, 1 hour after this church service, look at these little kids carrying up the candles on the staff here. These little kids, one of them carrying the cross. All of these folks here in this church service at St. Elias Church in Damascus. So this was 1 hour prior to this church being attacked and massacred. 30 people killed inside of this church.
Dozens injured. Dozens in the first ISIS-style bombing since Syria has toppled and been ruled by former ISIS leader.
Syrian journalist Kavour Galmasian, he himself, a practicing Christian Orthodox, is joining us now to analyze this. So, Kavour, this is not just an isolated incident. I mean, I don't know why the mainstream media around the world, they're just ignoring this story, Christians being hunted down. But this isn't just an isolated incident, is it?
Thank you very much, Clayton and Natalie, for having me. At the introduction, you mentioned that the mainstream media doesn't cover this case because, for a simple reason, for 14 years, they promoted for this outcome. They promoted for a regime change, and they promoted for the chaos which was unleashed after the regime change in the country. So they don't want to hold themselves responsibility, and they don't want to tell their audience that they have lied to their audience about the nature of the conflict in the country. Now, this type of attacks were anticipated since the regime change happened, and even before that. For 14 years, the Christians came under attacks, targeted attacks by the Al-Qaeda forces in the country, backed, sponsored, funded, and trained by different regional intelligence apparatuses and also the CIA, which played a major role in this. And this led into driving 90% of the Christians out of Syria. Now, in the neighboring countries of Syria, such as in Jordan, in Lebanon, and in Turkey, Western NGOs established offices there saying that we are here to save the Christians from persecution. So what they do, basically, they drove the Christians to the neighboring countries, and from the neighboring countries, they absorbed them into some of the Western countries, such as in Australia and in Canada. But this was some sort of, in my opinion, a soft ethnic cleansing of the Christians after unleashing this type of brutal war in the country. Now that only 10% of the Christians left in the country, now we're witnessing another type of targeted attacks against them after they came, after the Alawites, the Kurds, the Druze. Now they're coming after the Christians. So sending suicide bombers into a church, blowing it up completely, killing the worshippers there. And this act of intimidation, of course, only aims at driving the rest of the Christians out of Syria, because the ideology that Abu Muhammad al-Jolani, who is now the self-selected president of Syria, goes back at least 800 years from now. And he believes in the teachings of Ibn Taymiyyah. And Ibn Taymiyyah believes that first, this Al-Qaeda ideology people should purify their own domestic house from the minority Islamic sects. And when they are done with them, they have to come after the Christians, after the Jews, and after other religions. So this is just a logical, in my opinion, development, what is happening in the country after installing a person who personally believes in this. And the evidence and the proof of it is when the terrorist attack happened and 30 people were killed inside the church, Jolani issued a statement. And he said he expresses solidarity with the victims of these attacks, and he called the attack a criminal explosion. Now, this is different from a previous administration in Syria, which used to call such attacks terrorist attack. So Jolani doesn't even dare to call an attack against the Christian community in the country a terrorist attack, because he himself administered and he sponsored this type of attacks in Iraq. He was the one who used to build car bombs and send them into the Shia communities, into the Christian neighborhoods, and blow them up in their neighborhoods. Now that he's the president of the country, he cannot just walk back and say this is a terrorist attack, while he did the same thing 20 years ago in Iraq in order to start a civil war there.
But again, he said that was just a phase, you know, like when I had bangs. Exactly.
He reformed.
Yes. And back in March, we discussed the 900 Alawite civilians who were massacred under his watch. And he released this statement that he announced the formation of a fact-finding committee regarding these events. What happened when I asked you about this? You gave us a guttural laugh. That was your response to it. So is there anything that came of this fact-finding other than it's happening?
Actually, the numbers exceed the 10,000 Alawites who were slaughtered by his regime. And he formed a committee saying that he will investigate the case. And he gave 3 months for the committee to conclude the investigation. After 3 months, he extended it another 3 months. So we are now in the fifth month and nothing came out yet, which means when you are the ruler of a country and you're giving time after time after time for militants to commit such atrocities, you're basically tacitly and openly, basically, you're encouraging them to continue this type of atrocities against the religious and ethnic minorities in the country. Nowadays, I receive daily messages and phone calls from friends, colleagues, family in Syria. They're all desperate. They don't know what to do. Most of the people who are stuck now in the country, they are from the poorer classes in the country. They don't have any means to leave the country and go, let's say, to another place or to relocate or pay a smuggler to come to Europe. And ironically enough, if you remember the big refugee crisis in Europe in 2015 and 2016, and back then all European countries opened their doors. And now where are the European countries from the Christians of Syria? Why aren't they receiving refugees or give them any protection after now that they are the ones targeted by these terrorist attacks? We don't see any politician in Europe or in the West talking about it. We don't see the mainstream media is talking about it. But I personally urge at least Greece and other countries who have an invested interest in the Greek Orthodox community in the country to at least give them temporary protection in their own countries before the situation gets better. Because from the current moment, from what I see, what is happening in the country, that there is a persistent attempt to clean cleanse the country from the infidels and from those who call them like they have deviated from the rules of God. Therefore, the Christians who don't have any militias to protect themselves, they don't have any political power, they don't have a political party, and they don't have any regional power on their back, they are left alone in the country. They have no one, basically, to back them, support them, and assist them in the security, because trusting Jolani in this case is very delusional and it's very dangerous, because he's the same guy who is sending cars to the Christian neighborhoods, and they put big microphones and big speakers and calling the Christians to convert to Islam or to their ideology. And after all these incidences happening and provocations against the Christians, now that it ended up with a terrorist attack, now Christians going to the streets and calling for justice, and they're protesting against the Jolani regime. But be sure that this type of protest will lead to further persecution and prosecution of the Christians in Syria, because Jolani is not a tolerant towards such, yes, this type of, for example, protests against Jolani, because they say, we reject this type of terrorism and we reject the foreign fighters. Clayton and Natalie, you know that we have thousands and thousands and thousands of multinational Takfiri terrorists in Syria. And when the Syrian regime was asked, what are you going to do about them? They said, yeah, they helped us in the revolution, so we have to settle them in the country. And he wants to give them Syrian citizenship, and he has given them senior positions in the Syrian army. So we have people from Chechnya, we have people from Xinjiang, the Uyghurs, we have people from Pakistan, and one of the suicide bombers was from Pakistan, who blew up himself in a Syrian church. And President Trump, he agreed on this plan, because otherwise, what are they going to do with these thousands of jihadists in Syria if they're going to send them back to their own countries or probably relocate them to other places? These people are very anarchic, they are very terroristic, they are very radical. Wherever they go, they could wreak havoc. Therefore, they decided to settle them in Syria, give them Syrian citizenship, and let everyone forget about it. And now these multinational Takfiris are blowing themselves up among the Christian communities.
Take a look at this headline from DW.com. Attack on Christians. And again, this is just how the mainstream media portrays this. Attack on Christians threatens Syria's post-war cohesion. And I'll read you the byline, which says, Syria's new president has promised to replace the Assad dictatorship with a multi-religious society where all faiths are represented. Sunday's terror attack in Damascus shows us how much work remains to be done. So the mainstream media is, of course, spinning at the, you know, Syria's new president has promised to replace the Assad dictatorship with a multi-religious society. It's going to be a utopia.
Who funds this outlet? Who funds this outlet, Clayton? Is the German government. This is not even an independent outlet. They are funded by the Foreign Ministry of Germany, and they tell them exactly how to report about these cases. And one of the first European foreign ministers who flew to Damascus trying to shake hands with Jolani was the former foreign minister of Germany, Annalena Baerbock, whose ministry funds this this outlet. Now that she is out of power, it's still the same. Faces change, but similar people come to power, and they're still funding this type of mainstream media outlets, and they're trying to create a perception that there is a chance, you know, let's give him a chance. What is he going to do? The truth of the matter is they accepted Jolani because he said, I will not attack Israel. I will break the axis of resistance. I will seal the borders with Hezbollah. I will make life easier for Israel in the region. And I will normalize ties with them. I will condemn Iran and I will not condemn Israel. So everybody was excited about him when he came to power. And that's what he's basically doing. He is reorienting the geopolitical posture of Syria, let's say, from pro-Russia, pro-Iran, pro-BRICS, into pro-NATO and pro-WEF position, for example. And accordingly, everybody accepted him. If he kills all the Christians in Syria, there is no problem about that. Who is shedding crocodile tears now on the Christians in Iraq? 90% of them were also driven out of their country after the 2003 war. And nobody speaks about them now after 20 years. And similar thing will happen to the Syrian Christians in 10 years and 20 years. Everybody will forget about them because other countries will absorb these Christians into their countries. And the story is done. And the goal of the regime change war has been materialized. This is the main issue. It is about geopolitics and finances and money, and it has nothing to do about human rights. If Jolani is committing atrocities or violating human rights, it's okay. He's their ally.
Now, so what next? Because in the past, we've talked about, I mean, Syrians were protected under Assad. And you and I kind of felt like, well, if the United States gets out of Syria, that was sort of the way of things. But now the United States is saying, well, with Jelani, we're going to sort of put a lease on it, like make it so it was always okay and it's in arrears. And so then it seems like that's just going to be the way it is. The United States will keep a small presence there. Jelani's going to stay. What's going to happen? I don't see any, like, let's hope for this at all.
Yeah. The U.S. Army is finalizing a long-term deal with Jelani to stay in the country permanently for a long time. They want to stay in the eastern shore of the Euphrates, where most of the oil and the gas is, because American companies are going to extract this oil, process them, recycle them, and sell them, of course. So it's a big profit for them, and the American soldiers, boots on the ground, are going to be protectors, basically, of these oil fields. And their proxies, the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces there, because what the Americans want to do is to create spheres of influence in the country on the eastern shore of the Euphrates, which is one-third of the country where the American occupation forces are located. They are going to receive now a legitimacy from the current regime in Damascus, so they stay there for the sake of the oil and the gas. And the rest of the country can screw itself, because they don't have much of natural resources. They don't have the food basket. They don't have the carbohydrates. They can just continue living under Jelani. And this is where Turkey, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Israel, basically, they are endorsing this Jelani rule, because he's the one who is going to make the shift. This is a historic shift. Since World War II, since the end of World War II, and since the independence of Syria, we have had over probably 13 or 14 different presidents and leaders in the country, and none of them succeeded or managed or wanted to reorient Syria on the side of the transatlantic alliance. And this is what Jelani was tasked to do, and that is why they accepted him to come to power. And this is great news for the transatlantic movement in alliance in the Middle East, because the now that with this conflict between Iran, war between Iran and Israel, they have now an open airspace over Syria. Therefore, the Israeli forces can fly over the Syrian airspace and bomb Iran on the borders with Iraq. Before that, under Assad, he closed his airspace. And since 2018, the Israeli fighter jets didn't dare to penetrate the Syrian airspace because of the complicated and sophisticated Syrian airspace. But once Jelani came to power, Israel destroyed all the air defenses of Syria. And Jelani basically inherited the militia. He doesn't have any army. He doesn't have tanks. He doesn't have artilleries or air force or air defenses. Therefore, they have given him, let's say, you know how Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank rules. He's like he has a militia and he has a police station there. This is how he's ruling over the neck of the Syrians, basically, who are unarmed and they don't have any protection from anyone. That's why the future is very, very, very dire. And we're speaking about Syria. We're speaking about Palestine. Those places are the birthplace of Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ walked through the streets of this neighborhood. And therefore, it has a very big historical and cultural and religious significance, something that if it's wiped out from Syria, it could also lead into another domino effect to other regions, to countries that claim, their leaders claim that they are Christians. So if you're a Christian and if you care about the future of Christianity, you should not only just make noise about the victims. No, we have to lobby and pressure against this type of catastrophic policies coming from whether Washington or Tel Aviv. Regime change, destruction, chaos, and then create a vacuum for these ISIS and Al-Qaeda types to take over, just like they did in Iraq. And now they wanted to copy it in Iran. But in Iran, they say, no, it's different in Iran. This time is different in Iran. It's not going to be like in Syria or in Iraq. But I would say it would be worse, because 92 million people live in Iraq, in Iran. And there are multiple different ethnic and religious groups in Iran. So if you create a power vacuum, and if there is a mistrust or there is a security event in the country, everybody will start protecting itself, carrying arms, fighting against each other. So how many refugees could create this out of 92 million people to all these influencers in the United States who say, we don't want refugees, we don't want migrants, but every time there are the drums of war, they join it and they want to attack another country. And they create the same problems that they say that they don't want to face or address in their own countries. That's ridiculous, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's shocking when we go in and destabilize a country like Somalia, and then suddenly we wind up with all kinds of Somalian refugees, or Iraq. Yeah. Then we have all sorts of Iraqi refugees. It's amazing how that happens, and they pour into our country. Christians are under attack. I mean, I saw a study today, one out of every seven basically being persecuted around the world right now. And the story, for whatever reason, just not getting any coverage in the mainstream media. So you have to come to alternative media, like what Kevork does at Syriana Analysis, or what we do here at Redacted. So, Kevork, thank you so much for your courage. Thank you for your brilliance. One of the few, I mean, really, one of the great Syrian voices that we can turn to get the truth about this. Thank you, Kevork. Great to see you, as always.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for shedding light on this. You were one of the very few journalists with big platforms who continuously speaking about Syria. It's very important, in my opinion, for the journalists to speak about such cases.
Well, yes. We believe so. Thank you so much, Kevork. Absolutely.
Thank you.
So many people, you know, you wonder, you know, like, well, how important is it? Absolutely important. This is, right. You know, you have the mainstream media that's painting a narrative about a former ISIS terrorist, an Al-Qaeda terrorist, whatever you want to call him. What's the difference between them? Who's now leading this country, and Christians are being killed on a regular basis. And the mainstream media is like turning a blind eye to it. And the American government is turning a blind eye to it.
Well, yes. I mean, we only had one person who even ever voted to get out of Syria. That was Matt Gaetz, who put it to the floor, failed miserably. And look what happened to him. He became smeared and all manner of things. So although I want to say Matt Gaetz is killing it lately. It's very perplexing when you see someone of power like Matt Gaetz, who's on X, who's on his own video platforms, who's saying things that are true about our historical relationships in the Middle East. And it's like, what's happening there? I'm not used to members of Congress being this forthcoming. So I'm enjoying that. Yeah. Like I said about these reports from CNN recently that Iran did not have a nuclear weapon. I'm very confused when they tell the truth.
Perplexing. I know. It's kind of shocking.
It's very disarming. Yeah.
All right. We're going to take some of your chats here in a second. But first, listen, ladies and gentlemen, our world is being poisoned. Every day we're exposed to more chemicals sprayed into our skies, leaching into our food, polluting our air and water from pesticides, heavy metals to hormone disruptors, synthetic additives. These toxins are bombarding our bodies and silently destroying our health. But there is something you can do to fight back, and it starts with your gut health. Kimchi One from Bright Core Nutrition contains over 900 strains of beneficial probiotics. My mom is now using it. I'm using it daily. Natalie's using it daily. Her mom is now using it daily. These are beneficial probiotics that help flush out toxins in your body, restore gut balance, and support your immune system. This is one, really, honestly, in the past few months that I started using this, one of the best things that I've added to my daily supplements. I feel fantastic as a result of it. When your gut is strong, your body can resist. You'll feel the difference, better digestion, more energy, clearer thinking, stronger immunity, even improvements to your skin, your hair, your metabolism, all of it. And this isn't just hype. Studies show that fermented foods like kimchi can actually reduce the risk of obesity, improve blood sugar, support whole body wellness, arthritis. If you've got arthritis, you got to try this. Kimchi One is all natural, non-GMO, dairy-free, gluten-free, 100% made in the United States by a company that actually cares about your health. Today, you can get 25% off by using the code REDACTED. If you go to mybrightcore.com/redacted, 25% off. Or the best deal yet, call them. If you call them, you'll get 50% off. Have a conversation with them. They don't have some Indian call center somewhere answering your phone calls. This is an American company. Call them, 888-404-6312. Just give them a call and you'll get 50% off if you get on the phone with them. And free shipping, even a free bottle of vitamin D3 with your order. That number again, 888-404-6312. Detox your body, rebuild your gut health, take your health into your own hands starting today. Really a big fan of these guys, seriously. Added to my... You know, there was a period where I didn't have like do any supplements for like many, many years, and started in the past like 6 months or so. And I'm telling you, one, this Kimchi One is fantastic. And if you don't like the smell of kimchi, or you don't like want to eat kimchi, then this is the thing for you, because it's in a pill form and you don't have to worry about the, you know, the smell of it if you're not into that. But like Philip, I think Philip, that's all you eat is kimchi, right? That's like the only thing in your diet.
I will admit that I have before. I questioned whether I should, but I did it anyway. I just ate an entire jar of kimchi for dinner. Not with dinner, but for dinner. I just ate a jar of kimchi for dinner. And I would do it again. I love this stuff.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. Especially after I watched this doctor. I mean, there's a doctor who's like the leading doctor on visceral fat. It's like, you know, the fat that you don't see on your body. It's the fat that's like sits on your organs, you know? That's the really troubling stuff. And he said the number one way to reduce or eliminate visceral fat is to eat a meat-based diet, red meat specifically. But because we have like all this sterilized water now that we drink, we're not getting the mineralizations. We're not getting the good bacteria in our gut. So you're eating this red meat and then you're drinking like filtered water, but you're not getting any of the good bacteria for your gut. He said, you need to eat like a piece of meat with a fermented food. And he said, kimchi, like, you know, a sauerkraut, but really kimchi is way better than a sauerkraut. So, because then you need that gut bacteria to help break down everything. And he said, that's the number one thing that you can do to reduce and or eliminate visceral fat from your body. I forget the doctor's name. Maybe people in the chat room will know who this doctor is. But and I was concerned a few years ago when I did a scan and my visceral fat level was too high. Like I wasn't fat on the outside, but I had some fat sort of sitting on my, not good areas, you know, and that's the stuff. My dad, you know, had heart disease years ago. I had to get like quintuple bypass surgery and all of that. So I definitely don't want to have that happen in my life. Absolutely not. So anyway, my friends, well, thanks to all of you guys for being a part of our show and subscribing. It really is, I really want to thank you guys so much for being a part of our community here. Hey, check out, I sat down with Tucker Carlson in his studio yesterday, and we had a wide-ranging discussion about how the media, like, manufactures consent for war, and how very few, like, anti-war voices really are allowed on television. We had a pretty great discussion, so check that out on the Tucker Carlson Network, and it was great to hang out with Tucker for a few days. I haven't got a chance to see him for a few months, so that was really great. So check that out as well. And thank you guys so much for being a part of our community here. We really appreciate it. We are the largest anti-war show on YouTube. We are the largest anti-war show on Rumble. And it feels good. It feels good. It's kind of crazy, but back in the day, you'd have all sorts of Democrats and everyone really, you know, anti-war. No. Now you get mocked. Now you get mocked and you get called unpatriotic. If you don't support nuclear war, it's an astonishing turn of events. But so thank you for being anti-war. Thank you for joining us here. And we will root out the warmongers wherever they hide. Thank you guys for being here. We'll be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a great night, everyone.